Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. I'm your host, Josh Smith, joined by my co-host, Raul and Shu. Happy to join us. We got friend of the pod, Josh Cox, from over at the Section 17 podcast. Also, Duke Report. He's been on Press Row several times this year already. Figured we'd have him come on, talk a little bit about Duke Carolina, preview the big night. Josh is actually going to be in Chapel Hill, so we'll kind of get his takeaways and jump into it. Just going to quickly run through a few things right here. We're coming off a big road win at Virginia Tech, won by 10, which on if you listen to our last podcast, I called that probably our most impressive win of the season, given all of the circumstances coming off the short turnaround, Carolina looming. On the flip side, Carolina did not. They go to Atlanta, take an L just like we did. So they lost to Georgia Tech 74-73. I think they were on a 10-game winning streak prior to that. It's their first conference loss. So it does set up a little bit of uniqueness here to where if Duke were to win the game, we would technically be in first place, I believe, or maybe like a half game back. We would own the tiebreaker on them, right? Yeah. So that gives it a little more weight, as if it really needed much more weight. But if you're not super familiar with Carolina, they are 17-4, seventh on KenPom. They're ninth in the net. I think they're still technically number three in the country. Got wins over Tennessee, Oklahoma, Clemson. It's been a long time, fellas, since we've had a top 10 matchup. And honestly, we'll talk about it, but it doesn't really kind of feel like that quite yet to me, as like that, you know, some of those older teams that we've had like in the early aughts and some of that. But hopefully we'll get that kind of matchup here. But Josh, I'll toss it to you first, just kind of globally here. What's been your impression of Carolina, man? They've kind of turned things around.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are the beneficiary, as Duke has been this year, of senior guard leadership, man. Like you got to start talking about RJ Davis when you talk about the success. Yep. The UNC's had. In fact, Jeremy Roach has had a hugely successful season, but he's not even being talked about much in the conference, and it's because everybody's talking about RJ Davis, and honestly, rightfully so. And so, like, you get rid of Caleb Love out of that locker room and kind of out of that mix there, and this team is, you know, very obviously RJ's team, and he stepped up, and I'm, you know. And then I believe too they've not focused the offense really at all around Baycott. They've let Baycott kind of get his points on, like, you know, putbacks and kind of garbage jump type stuff, which is fine. And I mean, they've, you know, what can you say? I mean, they were on a huge winning streak, got bit by Georgia Tech, but I mean they're solid, well deserving of that ranking where they were at, and you know did some really really smart moves in the portal.
Yeah,
you know, with guys, you know, picking up Ryan and
Harrison Ingram from the Stanford.
Harrison Ingram, yeah, man, those are. I mean, Ingram's been incredible for them. So yeah, that's kind of my kind of overarching view of them. It's like this is RJ's team. They've really focused it around him, and they've been successful as a result.
Yeah, man, you mentioned the portal. I think Ingram might be the like the one that scares me the most on their team. Like RJ's obviously going to do what he does, but for them to really win, they need that one other player, whether that's Ryan kind of stepping up. I think for the most part, it has been Ingram that's kind of been that guy. It's like a dog on the floor. Reminds me a lot of a Justice Winslow a little bit in that 2015 season. They got him playing the four, which is just really he's getting unlocked the way that I was kind of hoping Mark Mitchell might get unlocked at the four, right? Playing next to Flip. The one thing that stood out to me the most, and I think this is where I've been most impressed with Hubert, and you can kind of say like last year he should have done it like this, and maybe he just didn't quite have control of that team or as control of Love as he should have. I think if you replace Love with Cormac, but keep the roles the same this year, they're like ridiculously scary. Because Baycott's basically a role player at this point, right? Like he's like their fourth option. Like he's getting like 5-6 shots up a game. Now he's going for 20-20, I'm sure, Saturday, now that I said that. But like, I think you got to tip the cap to Hubert a little bit here. Like, what do y'all think about that? Like, I mean, he's got a case right now. I mean, he's probably looking at ACC Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, I see why not, from the train wreck that they were last year to, you know, turn it around the way they have. You know, kudos to him. I think, like you guys talked about, Ingram's been, for me watching him, I think the biggest thing for him, because they replaced Leakey, who plays defense but gives you nothing in terms of spacing on offense, with Ingram, who probably isn't as good as a defender, at least like all around, as Leakey was, but he can shoot the ball, right? So, you know, with Ingram being a stretch four, Ryan, you know, Ryan's a solid pickup. The guy's like, you know, 37 or something. He's like a year behind me. you know, he can get hot in a game. He hasn't shot the ball well, but he has the ability to do it, to hit 5 or 6 threes in a game. So I like the way that they've moved away from Baycott, because they've got shooting, and, you know, why just take Baycott for a bunch of back downs and tough shots in the paint when you can, you know, move the ball around and hit a lot of threes. That's what's been, different for him this year.
Yeah, because I think they've really, like you mentioned Leakey, but like it's almost like they replaced Ingram with Nance, which to me is like immediately gives you more toughness, right? Immediately gives you more flexibility on the wing and how you can defend. Yeah, Cormac, man, like I don't even want to say it because he'll light us up, dude, but
30% from three so far this year.
I think it's been like, it keeps being talked about as like this shooter, and it's like, when, bro? Like your one good season, like I don't know, man. He's definitely lighting us up now that I said that.
But on the other side, I think Ingram has sort of outperformed his shooting expectations. He's already made as many threes this year as he did his first two seasons at Stanford. The percentages are way up, and it's like, how much of that is just small sample? But at this point, we're like 20 games into the season. You have to believe it's real.
Yeah, and I think he was pretty highly ranked coming out of high school.
He was,
too, I want to say, right?
He's so like maybe All-American, right?
Pretty sure. Was he?
Top 20, yeah.
Okay.
You know, you could just say that like playing around more talent, you know, just puts him in a better situation where he doesn't have to be as like high up in the hierarchy as an option. Maybe that's it.
Sure. Obviously, they got the freshman, Elliot Cadeau, who's kind of had a bit of an up and down season, seems to have kind of maybe solidified things a little bit. Not much of a score, doesn't typically seem to look for that, but some of the passing that he has, dude, like the feel that he has, the quickness, reminds me a little bit of the Tyus type in terms of just the ability to predict and to pass where it needs to be. Like that's such a skill to be able to pass into space, like and lead your guy where he needs to be. Obviously, RJ is just thriving off of that. I mean, if you look at our preseason or our preseason pods, like I was really kind of bullish on us again in this matchup because I thought that we would just be able to take advantage from a size standpoint, that like their two guards are going to get bullied. Hasn't really happened to them, like not in a way that's exposed it in any sort of way where they're forcing Cadeau out of the game. And when they do, I mean, Trimble's respectable at this point, right? Like these guys got depth. We don't really, like we don't have playable depth. They do. Trimble can come in. Washington can come in. Like what's the other? Withers can come in. You know, I know the Paxson kid sometimes comes in and does anything. But I mean, just with the Washington, Withers Trimble bench lineup is pretty solid, man, when you think about it.
Well, and they defend so well, man. They're like a, you know, one of the best defensive teams in the country.
Number four.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, once again, that's a Hubert Davis thing, right? Yeah. You guys mentioned Hubert earlier. I mean, he's definitely turned that around in that focus, man, because that's definitely not typically been the case, you know, in Chapel Hill, but they do defend very well. And I would say that's probably where Baycott, I mean, he's good on DV. I mean, he's a rim protector in that sense. Not that he can jump out of the gym or anything, but I mean, he's not easy to score on down there. And then they're really, I think, flexible everywhere else, you know, 1-4, you know, on defense. So, you know, it'll be an interesting matchup because Duke obviously is one of the best shooting teams,
yeah,
you know, in the conference, and UNC is the best defense in the conference. So we'll see what happens with that. Right.
And it's hard to have been carried by their 3-point defense, which for like an 8-game sample was just like astronomical, where teams were shooting like in the teens against them. It started to pivot a little bit, right? Starting with Florida State, they were 9 of 20, 45%. Georgia Tech, 9 of 20, 45%. We shoot 45% from three. I'm going to feel pretty good about it. Yep. But then again, maybe if their 3-point defense is for real, then they're due to hold us to 28%, right? Which would not be a good thing for us. But yeah, man, their defense has been impressive.
What are we, 9 games in to the ACC? We're 7-2, I believe.
Yeah. They're
7-2.
Yeah, they have one extra one of those.
Duke is shooting like 40% from three in conference play, though, as a team.
Yep.
Which is, I mean, this is the best Duke shooting team. We've been waiting for this, right? For years for a team like this. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, if you look, I mean, obviously we're the only two teams that have been consistently ranked throughout the season. I mean, this is, even though you mentioned Josh earlier, it doesn't feel like one of those top 10 matchups. It is. I mean, Duke and Carolina are two of the top 10 teams in the country. I think there's no doubt about that. And so whether it feels like it or not, you know, it definitely is. It qualifies.
Yeah. And maybe part of that is just because of like, and I think Raul mentioned this in one of our messages offline, was they're coming off the loss and we're like starting to refine ourselves, right? Like we were really good, like projected to be really good, then kind of like fell off a cliff and then got injured and then lost at home to Pitt. And then now it's kind of like, maybe we're finding things, we're figuring things out, we're starting to get healthy. Proctor looks like the guy that all of us thought he was going to be from day one. Just you can look in his face, right? Look at his eyes, the way he's playing, the way he's moving. He just mentioned it in the press conference today that the ankle is good, lateral movement strong. Hopefully Jeremy is saying the same stuff. I mean, he was there today as well. He looked fine. That is what typically we're used to, maybe playing at a different level at this point in the year. And John Shire teams so far have kind of done a different path where we don't hit the ground trailblazing and then fall apart in February and March. We kind of stumble around a little bit and then we kind of figure it out. We'll see what happens there. Anything y'all want to talk about regarding Carolina specifically before we just kind of jump into some player matchups here that I think are pretty interesting?
Well, to come back to their defense, you obviously were right to call out the 3-point defense. It's still at under 30%, so you would expect some more regression there. But the rest of their defense looks solid to me. You know, it's like they're allowing 45% on twos, which is like what, top 40 in the country or something. I don't have it pulled up.
35, yeah,
yeah. So, and then you know they have a nice, fairly high block rate as well. They rebound well, so all that stuff seems real to me. It's really only the 3-point defense I question, but even if that were to go up to like 35%, you'd still think they would be like top 10 in defense. So yeah. I think they do have a good defense. It's just a question of how good. I think right now you're looking at that 4 versus 19 split, and I actually expected that to be reversed. Yeah. I'm surprised they're only 19th on offense. That would be the worry there, that they're actually underperforming on offense.
Yeah, and really the only thing that makes me like kind of question the 3-point defense is the volume of shots that teams have gotten up, right? Like usually 3-point defense, the best way to play 3-point defense is kind of the old like prime K method of like, we're just not even gonna let you shoot threes, right? We're gonna run you off the line. Now you're gonna have a layup line at times, right? Like we're gonna get backdoored to death and the middle's gonna stay open, but we're just gonna run you off the 3-point line, right? We're wanting you to shoot maybe 10 a game. Teams are getting up 18 to 22 shots a game on them. And
making like two or three
in
two
for a while. Right. So at some point you're going to get burned if you allow teams to shoot that many. Now, the other flip side to that is just teams in general are just shooting way more threes than they were 10, 15 years ago against K2, right? Like the game has changed. So that'll be something definitely to monitor here. But let's look into some matchups here. Let's start with the big fellas, right? Let's go Bacot versus Flip. What do y'all think about that matchup? Josh, I'll go to you here first. Do you see where one has the advantage in this? Are you looking at it from a certain standpoint here, more like the defensive aspect on the offensive end? What excites you about that Bacot Flip matchup?
Well, I mean, first of all, Flip defends the perimeter much better than he defends the post, you know, and there was a couple of clips from the Virginia Tech game where he got caught out on the perimeter and he really does a good job. So
dominated Couture out there.
Yeah, he did. The one play on Couture was great. Couture got it on both ends, man. He was getting crossed up on one end and then shut down the other. But no, I actually question whether we may see, you know, we may see Bacot guard Mitchell and you may see Ingram on the Flip. There may be some switch around there. So first of all, I'm not sure those two guys are going to be matched up against each other the whole time. I think there's a potential there because we've mentioned that Bacot is not a focal point. So I think Duke could get away with having Mitchell on him some if they needed to. I've just thought through that because, you know, Flip is prone to foul trouble.
Bacot, I hope they don't do that. Yeah. I hope they don't do that.
But yeah, I would – I mean, obviously, you have to give Filipowski the overall advantage in that matchup. I mean, we've just talked about how Bacot's not – sometimes not getting 10 shot attempts, you know, in a game. And so you've got to give Flip that. Flip's ability to shoot to three, Flip shooting – like 37%, I think, for the season, but like 40% in conference play from three. You know, he's become really more of a central hub of the offense, leading the team in assists in conference play. So, I mean, you've got to give that, but I will say on the boards and kind of that nitty gritty, like garbage baskets, Bacot's still elite in that. And like, that's going to be a difficult matchup. And this could be a game where we see, you know, Duke's winner's favorite, Ryan Young, you know, maybe have to come in and you know, use his five fouls and kind of throw his body around some there. But once again, no complaints from me about Ryan Young because he's doing it well. And then, you know, every now and then he'll you know, score double digits. So, but yeah, overall in that matchup specifically, Flip's going to take him outside. Flip's going to be a part of that offense out on the perimeter as well. And I think at that point, you have exposed Bacot as much as you can.
Yeah. If I'm Hubert, I 100% do what you do. And I absolutely hope that they don't do that, where they just like, Bacot, you're going to take Mark. We're going to allow you to sag. Ingram, you're going to get up and Flip.
Yeah. Right?
If he tries to drive from the perimeter, stuff that, take that. Like, that's not going to fly. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough matchup for Flip to operate from the perimeter. Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully that, we that just go happen. To left block post-ups if we got Ingram guarding.
Yeah, you do, right? You bully him down there and say, okay, like, but Ingram's strong, man. Like, he can, I mean, and he rebounds. He had 10
Flip
points.
Flip has to have a little bit of size. What is Ingram, like 6'7", maybe?
Oh, he's got size, for sure, right? He's got height, for sure. Yeah.
But what do you guys think of Young in this matchup? Because on the one hand, Bacot doesn't stretch the floor.
Right, I think
so that might help
here.
Young out there. Yeah. But on the other hand, if Bacot's coming out to set screens over and over again for RJ
that's
Davis, that could be a little dicey.
Yeah. That's what they'll do. They'll just continue doing that. Now, if we just make it to where we're not going to switch that and you just kind of live with it and
the guard just has to fight through the screen, I think, and Ryan can just play back on Bacot.
Yeah.
That's what
we've been doing a lot more of that, fighting through the screens than a lot of Duke teams in the past. I mean, the guards, especially when the bigs come up, the guards are sticking are staying and fighting through a whole lot more than what I really expected.
Yeah, Proctor's great at it. Roach has gotten so much better at it too.
Mm-hmm. So much better at it. Yeah, for sure. Well, let's kind of pivot then and talk about the guard matchup a little bit. I think the biggest question here is who guards RJ, right? And I would expect Roach to want that assignment, right? To want that matchup.
Proctor,
yeah, I think it probably does have to be.
But a little, he's got a little bit more length on him too.
And RJ plays off ball now. Cadeau is the point guard, kind of, right? And like RJ will come and they'll set him up like off some movement stuff, off some action stuff, off some secondary stuff. They just free him up to get him ready to catch and shoot, which he is elite at. When healthy, Proctor is one of the best off ball defenders in the country, right? Like he was last year, he is this year,
especially lately.
Yeah, and man, he'll tough fight. On Couture, tough on Gerard. Like
he's
gonna
fight, hell, right?
Like he's gonna fight through those. So that's what I would go with. And then especially when, if Roach is still just a little banged up, you mean you don't put him on Elliott, who's not going to be a threat to shoot the ball. As a matter of fact, I want him shooting the ball. Like if Elliott wants to take 6, 7, 8 threes.
But I don't want McCain on Elliott where he's going to like get broken off the bounce and just create McCain's all of these.
On Ryan.
Got to have him on Cormac, right? Y'all just go over there and kind of see who wants stand to go 3-10 or 4-10 and shoot 12 threes or whatever. No disrespect to either one of those guys.
How tall is Cormac Ryan, do you know?
6'5".
6'5", yeah.
Okay, because my only worry with McCain there would be we've seen McCain get shoot over the top of him.
Yeah.
But he's not as tall as Henson, so it might be all right.
Yeah, I think that's where, like, you have a Caleb Foster, too, that's going to play a ton of minutes, and he's 6'5", and would match up perfectly with him there. And I actually think this could be – I don't know why Jalen Blakes has been out for two games unless it was something to do with that hand. But I think this is another game that, if needed, and especially maybe when – if a Proctor rotate out, you know, for a couple of minutes, I could definitely see John trusting Blakes to guard RJ for, like, small spurts because –
Or to run them together, to run Blakes and Proctor together and just like, hey, y'all got RJ and Elliott. Y'all can switch if y'all want to switch. Like y'all control the guard play there and we'll just feast around it. I think this is a game where Blakes, honestly, this is one of the first times in a long time where I thought the teams were similar in kind of makeup, like trying to play four out, right? Got some explosive guard play. It's going to be really interesting because they match up just really well. And I could see where both teams feel good about the individual matchups going in. I think that's just, it's feasible that could, that's going to happen here. We talked a little bit about Mark. Where do you see him on this? To me, I want him guarding Harrison Ingram. Like that's where I think he matches up the best with. I think Ingram can be their like energy guy, right? He's got some of that MF-er in him a little bit. He likes to talk. He's demonstrative. We saw what Mark did to Nance last year, right? Like he really kind of put him in the blender and just made it terrible for him.
Didn't have enough of them lemon Oreos, I guess.
Right? I guess not, man. Any other, like, to me, it's pretty clear cut that he should guard Ingram. Do y'all see that differently? No. Do you put him on Bacot to protect Flip? I don't think you do this year, unless they're just going to drastically say we're going to play through Bacot, which they haven't done all year.
No, I'm going with him on Ingram.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate that Ingram is actually shooting well, because something has helped us, you know, the last few years is just we've had Leaky Black to sag off of, and even Nance to an extent we could sag off of. And this year they don't necessarily have that weak spot, you know, at the four. So that'll be interesting. Because I felt like last year Mark was able to kind of help down a lot. And I'm just not sure if you want to do that when there's a 40% 3-point shooter out there.
Yeah. In fact, it's the reverse, right? They're going to help down off of Mark, which is going to be interesting to see.
He's got to eat up that space.
And he's getting a lot better at that. But we have to be really crisp, because that's going to be, I mean, that's the defensive blueprint to beat Duke right now. Is still, I think, even with us playing a little bit quicker and trying to be a little bit more decisive, I still think you kind of have to play off Mark and just live with it and see what happens. I would expect them to try that. We'll see here. We'll see. Let's talk about their offense. How do y'all think we attack this? Like, do we try to slow this game down? I mean, last year, John really was like, nope, we're going to really control pace. We're going to make this a grinded out possession by possession game. We're going to be smarter, right? We're going to take care of the ball. This year, we're playing at a lot quicker pace, especially recently, right? Like the possessions have went up. Like our offense has really kind of matched the call here. Our defense is playing catch up a little bit here lately. What do y'all see that we do to attack this? We've mentioned maybe not switching all of the screens like we did against Pitt. Like, is there something that y'all are looking for of here's how we're going to do this? Do you try to cut the head off the snake and just dominate Cadeau and not let him get the ball up? Like, what are y'all looking at in terms of how we're going to attack that offense? Josh, I'll go to you first since you're guest of honor here.
Yeah, thanks. No, I mean, I don't know this for sure, but I could see us, you know, not switching as much. And especially if we like that Proctor on RJ and things, the worst case scenario on not switching is that you run them off the 3-point line and they then have to create in the mid range, right? Or whatever. And so like, I don't actually think it's a bad thing, especially if you know, a guy like Proctor or even Roach, I got to give Roach his flowers that he has become a much better defender. So to me, I don't know. I mean, I know we can switch with that being said, but like, if we really want to keep that matchup with like Foster, with Proctor on RJ, like we don't have to switch everything. And so, you know, Baycott is a different story. And like I said, with Flip, if Flip does get switched onto a guard, I trust Flip's perimeter defense. And so like, I could see us not trying to switch, but if we have to, really, we could switch 1 through 5 if need be. Like, so I don't know. It's going to be very interesting. I think the focus has got to be RJ and whatever we have to do to get him off his game, even if it means, you know, somebody else, you know, beats us. I don't know. You got to me, he's the head, even though he doesn't bring the ball up as much. He's the head that you got to cut off.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, but I guess I'll go opposite way. I think RJ's good and he's going to kind of get his regardless. I mean, we're going to, obviously I want Proctor to make his life hell and to try to limit his efficiency. But I think what we kind of hinted at earlier, he needs that second guy. And if you can stop Ingram or Baycott, Ryan from getting 18, something like that, then you probably got a pretty good shot. Cause I mean, we just watched Georgia Tech. RJ scored 28, took him 24 shots, but nobody else gave him anything in double digits.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah, I kind of like that too, right? Like, I'd like to make RJ a passer because he doesn't really want to do that, right? Like, he's looking for shots. His role in the offense is to eat shots, to take a lot of shots. If we can make him distribute, that would be nice. To me, this is an old talking point here, but new coach, same philosophy. We got to get back on defense, right? We got to slow the tempo down on them a little bit. We can't let these dudes run, because when they start running, RJ's head starts bobbing and dude is a 90% free throw shooter. Mm-hmm. And so you can't put him on the line. You can't let him get transition threes up. He loves to take them quickly. He shoots 41% from there. You got to make him a mid-range shooter. You just got to, and you just live with it a little bit. Like, I hate it for Ryan. He's going to come in the game and he's going to play a little drop coverage. He's going to get like 3 straight shots splashed in his face probably. But as long as they're not threes, I'm cool with it. Right? Yeah. Like, I mean, as long as you're RJ's making him take twos.
RJ's mid-range floaters, you know,
runners. He's got the package, but you make him take that, right?
But like, you make him take that because he hits the three just as often. Yeah. I think that the key, and we'll probably get into it, is the rebound. We got a defensive rebound. If they get a bunch of offensive rebounds and are getting, because that place, I mean, those guys – kind of like us, they can hit three threes, you know, back-to-back possessions, and that kind of blows the game open. That gets the crowd going, you know. I think the key for us is kind of like at Virginia Tech, we gotta take the crowd out of it early. Yeah. You gotta play well and take them out of it early.
Yeah that'll sure. be a interesting, like, because something's got to give there, right? So Duke has actually been really good on the defensive glass overall on the year, but on the other hand, Carolina is top 60 in offensive rebounding. So to me, that could be a pretty decisive battle. Like, if Carolina's offensive rebounding is able to outweigh our defensive rebounding, then that could be a problem for us for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's even though they're playing quote unquote smaller or a little more traditional, they're still doing these fundamental things that Carolina basketball does. They're running, they're hitting secondary break, they're rebounding.
They're still top 50 in pace, over 71 possessions a game, compared to our 68 or so.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like nationally average. See, I don't think it's a great idea to run with them. We have been pretty good on the year, and I think in Shire's whole tenure, really, at transition defense, that hasn't been something that's jumped out to me as something we've done badly.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we have. That's been like, really defense in general. I mean, there's been stretches this year that's kind of plagued our defense, but for the most part, it's been pretty consistent.
It's the flip foul trouble, right? And then you bring in Ryan Young, points. And it just kind of depends on what the matchup is. Sometimes he's amazing. Other times they've got guards who can drag him out into space, and then that's a problem, like the Pittsburgh game.
Yep, I agree.
On the rebounding end, this would be a great night for Mark Mitchell to get another double digit rebounds. Yeah. That would be
huge.
I think that's a key to victory. You know,
on Flip getting like more than three or whatever also.
Yeah. And the guards, right? McCain's gotta come McCain's down and crash. Well, before we kind of talk about on our side and what we could do to kind of make life a little bit difficult for them, let's take a quick little break here.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly.
We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
All right, let's come back. We talked about how maybe we could try to slow their offense down. What about mismatches for Duke? Like, who do we hunt? Are you seeing anybody that you're targeting out there? I think Cormac's going to be a guy that's going to get a lot of talk in this buzz. I think the guards, even though they haven't really been exposed that well, I still think you got to try to put RJ and Cadeau in ball screen, you know, just nonstop and make them do something there. Those Roach flip or Proctor flip ball screens with like McCain in the corner, Mitchell in the dunkers, flipping that short roll. It's hard to stop that. Like, we can miss the shot. Sure, we can miss the shot, or we can charge, or like whatever, but you got to pick your poison there. And for me, like, I'm trying to hunt their backcourt a little bit. Like, y'all see anything different? Josh, you going after Baycott, trying to get him in foul trouble? Or like, who do you see is like, okay, let's, if you get ISO'd on this guy, you got to try to make something happen.
Well, first of all, you mentioned Cormac Ryan. I mean, if he's going to guard Jared McCain, me, you got to almost JJ Redick Jared McCain in this game. You got to run him off screens. You got to get him open. He's got such a quick release, that transition three that he likes to shoot.
Yeah.
You got to always be looking for him. That would be number one for me. And then, you know, Flip obviously has the advantage on Baycott. If Baycott is guarding him, when Flip comes out and plays, you know, at the top, which he's done quite a bit, and Duke is really turning him into like, that's not fair to say like Jokic, but I mean, almost like a point like there, you know, they want him with the ball there where he has where he's triple threat. He can pass, you know, drive or shoot. And so, yeah, I believe you absolutely exploit Baycott. I don't know if you do it as much in the pick and roll as you do it and just like give Flip the ball, let him turn and face up and let Baycott try to stop him. He can shoot up Flip's as tall or taller than him, way quicker than him, and just has a better skill set. And so I think those two things, Cormac Ryan and Baycott, I'm interested to see how we attack both of them. But I think those are the two guys that you go at hard.
And if you can draw, like you said, if Baycott is on Flip and we're able to draw Baycott out, that's where earlier you mentioned that Flip being a hub, Flip being the leader in assist. If Baycott's playing up, the rim protection is just not there, right, for them. Like, Harrison is good, but he's not that. Like, that's where we can cut, right? Get Proctor moving, get Roach on some DHOs, like whatever you need to do to get downhill because the rim protector's out. That could be a viable strategy. Raul Shu, like where are you looking for the mismatch here? Like, who are you attacking?
I think you said it, the backcourt. I mean, coming into the year, I thought my impressions of Carolina is they added a lot of shooters. Their offense will be great, but yeah, I mean, their defense, they're starting two guys that are like my size, you know, 6'1". Proctor's 6'5", can get to that mid-range shot, likes that little Dirk turnaround, one-footed, you know, spin in the lane. Get a couple of those, maybe even get some. And Gary Trent would be licking his chops to post up Cadeau. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
So
put him in the triple threat.
Yeah, put him in the triple. So, I mean, I'd say get Roach going, you know, around a screen, going downhill, and Cadeau fouled out in the Georgia Tech game. You know, had a lot of reaching. So, that's where I would be going first.
Okay.
I think our strengths with our guards right now. I mean, Flip.
Yeah.
I like Flip, and you guys have talked about the Flip-centric offense. I think we need to use Flip as a hub, play through the guards, and you know, get it to Flip whenever we see the opportunity of the mismatch to arise, but play through the guards.
Sure.
And Roach should have a massive strength advantage on Cadeau. You know, Cadeau is small. He's kind of skinny. He's a freshman. I would think that would be a mismatch we could exploit. Mm. But yeah, I agree with you about Flip. Like, he needs to be more of a passer than a scorer because, especially if you look at how Flip's been playing lately, maybe this is something he breaks out of on Saturday, but the last three games have been rough. I think the splits are like 43% from the field, 10% from three, 50% from the line, which where the hell did that come from?
That is a weird anomaly that he's had.
Hopefully it's just a small sample. You know, it's three games.
Sure.
It is, but Shu, you've been on pressure recently. There, like, if you just watch him, there's like he gets so frustrated and he's in his own head quite a bit.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, I think it's really big for Flip if he gets off to a good start. You know, if he can hit, you know, his first shot or two, like that just changes his mentality for the rest of the game. And so, you know, I'm not trying to overthink it. I'm just, but you know, if he gets out in a Pitt game, I think he hit a three on the first possession. And then we saw at Pitt, and we saw what happened. I mean, he went crazy the rest of the game. So I think that's important for him. But I agree with all of you guys on that hub passing. I mean, I even joke, like, I wish Shire would say, like, look, man, if you get 10 assists, if you get double digit assists, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, take the dude out for steak or something, but like give him like some sort of deal for that. Cause I think the more he passes the ball, the better we are.
All you don't want is double digit turnovers though.
Yeah, right.
Now
yeah.
You want that quadruple double.
Yeah.
He needs help though, right? Because he's a great passer, but like sometimes we're very crisp off ball, like what we're doing. Like Mark can be very crisp, like Jerry can be really tight, and then sometimes we're just not, right? Like we get a little tired, or we're just kind of thinking that Flip's gonna go to work. We have to help him. We have to move. We have to really create opportunities for him to pass. But you know, I still think we do attack those guards, dude. You just make them defend you, right? You make them come out and make a play. If I was John, I would be pulling up the 2011 ACC tournament game and showing Nolan Smith making Kendall Marshall's life absolute hell. He did not let that dude cross half court with the ball, right? Like absolutely dominated him. That's what I want, right? Like if I'm whoever's guarding Cadeau, like that's why I throw Jalen Blake's in there for 5, 10, 15 minutes if he's doing it, right? Of like, dude, like I'm pulling out the motivation, right? Like remember the Titans. I want them to remember tonight, right? Like this dude will not cross the 50. Like it's not happening.
Well, one thing you mentioned too is their depths, but their depths not really in their guard position. Their depths in their forward and wing. So you attack the guards, you get, you know, RJ or Cadeau in foul trouble, and then now they got to bring Trimble in. And Trimble's a really improved player, athletic, a good defender, shooting the ball better than he did last year. You know, last year was not good for him, but, you know, I don't know if Carolina fans trust him in a big game, you know, taking a big three down at the end. So I'd rather have him doing it than RJ, obviously.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, one thing we haven't talked about is who's just going to have that ridiculously stupid game for Carolina. Yeah,
somebody tends to have.
It's probably Paxton, right? The good kid that didn't play.
Somebody has a game where they play out of their mind. They have, you know, anyway, I don't know.
If it's Ingram, we lose to me. right? Yeah, if probably, he's the one that, like, because his out of mind could really be like a 25 point on good efficiency, and RJ could be right there with him at 20, 22. That would do it. It would kind of suck for Cormack to all of a sudden just hit like six or 10 threes. Like,
see, I think he's the more candidate, because I think Mark's not going to allow Ingram to get 20 something. Like, hopefully Ingram can have a good night, but I don't, Mark's made people's life tough. If anybody, it's Cormack can hit six threes, because, you know, people just love to shoot over Jared. Maybe, or Caleb, you know, Caleb's, I love Caleb, you know, Harrisonburg boy, but gets lost sometimes on defense. So
off ball, right? Him and McCain off ball is off where ball, it gets a little, you got to be looking, head's got to be on a swivel. Trimble could be a guy, right, that could do it. I mean, Cadeau could be the guy. Like, we're talking about targeting, but if we're not careful and he's coming downhill and like we can't stay in front of him, he could have 12 and 7 at halftime, you know, like he could easily do that.
Yeah, we've had the layup lines happen before. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask about, like, how we should guard him, because obviously his three-point shooting isn't a threat, but I also don't think you want to give him like a ton of space to kind of get ahead of steam either.
Right.
So I think you probably play up on him, but if he sets a screen, you drop under the screen. That's fine. Yeah. But you play up on him otherwise.
A guy we haven't talked about that I thought was like played really good last year against us. Like every time he came in, he seemed to do like something positive. Again,
Jalen Washington.
It's Jalen Washington, man. Like, I like him as a prospect too.
Yeah. I mean, I worry about like if Flip is in foul trouble and then Baycott's at, like, I don't know, who do you put on him? Ryan can't guard him because he can shoot. He can step out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the 3-point volume for him is really low.
He's only taken like 10 threes all year, but he hit 5 of them.
And every shot he takes is one that RJ or Ingram isn't taking, so you have to kind of live with that a little bit, right? Like, that's like the NJ Collins kid at Virginia Tech. Like, sure, he lit us up early, but it's hard for a team to just completely reinvent themselves in the middle of the game and say, "Oh, okay, dude, you've been getting a 15% usage, tonight you're getting 40." Like, that's tough to just do in a game, right? Like, unless you prepared that way, like, it's it can happen, but
that's why I think it would be interesting to see how they respond if we do effectively hound RJ. Does the offense switch back to going through Baycott in that situation? And if so, I think that might be a win for us, because they haven't really done that all year. And I'd rather a Baycott post up than an RJ three.
100%. Or even an RJ drive. I would rather a Baycott post up than an RJ drive. Yeah, it's going to be big. You know, we mentioned top 10, even if it might not feel like it, it is. There's obviously implications for the ACC title race. You know, like, you could even go as far as saying winner of this game is probably sitting in the driver's seat to win the conference. You know, there's a lot of games left to play, but this is a big one, right? I mean, obviously it's a big one, but it's a big one for like just more than it just being the Duke Carolina game. So we can talk about that a little bit. Fellas, let's zone out a little bit here. Let's get into some just kind of favorite Duke game or moments or memories or let's keep it to, I like, Roe, you mentioned this. Let's keep it to ones that are in Chapel Hill. Obviously, I'm just going to throw this one out so that we don't even have to. The river shot at Chapel Hill is just always going to be that, right? It's just iconic. We had no business winning that game. And so, like, that's a big one. So let's take that one off the table. And that one, too.
I mean, what, we were down, what, double digits with under 2 minutes to go?
And we're down 10, like 2 minutes and 15 seconds or something, and they just fell apart.
Just for that shot to even be a possibility was ridiculous.
It's probably one of the biggest coaching failures from Roy, right? Like, if you just held the ball and took, like, 4 shot clock violations, you win.
You still win.
Yeah. You win, right? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I remember possession where we drew a charge on Harrison Barnes because he's, like, driving down the lane with
17 seconds.
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, I remember that too. Zeller missing the free throw and all that good stuff. But
and so then there was some bad luck too, obviously, with the Zeller
tip in. Yeah. Curry kind of walked back to Durham and then came back to Chapel Hill and shot that 1-3. You know, so
Tyler Thornton's hitting threes to start the whole run. Like,
Kelly with the nice midi. Yeah. You know, we'll take that one off. So 2012 excluded here, Josh. What are some favorite kind of games or moments or plays in the dome?
I mean, it's recency, but the ridiculousness of the Trey Jones, Wendell Moore, Like that. Yeah. I mean, first of
the
all,
double buzzer beater game.
Yeah. We were wearing the god awful uniforms that everybody will remember.
Yes, the 100-year anniversary.
With the no number on the front.
God,
they were terrible. But just the probability of that. I mean, the fact that Trey could miss the free throw properly, getting the rebound, putting up the terrible shot. Like, I mean, just all of that together. Like, if I'm a UNC fan, like that is the absolute, I don't know, it's the pinnacle of losing, maybe other than, like you mentioned, Austin's shot. So that's one. And then, I mean, to go back, I'll just do one more.
No, I would throw him out there.
It's got to be the Chris Duhon.
Yeah, that was going to be
time reverse layup. What was that?
04. Goat level Duke jersey blue. Like, yes.
Yeah. So those would be my two, if I look back at it. But I have to say the Trey Jones window more. It was borderline ridiculous. So that's what has made it all more fun for me for sure.
Okay. I like those. Shoe, what you got?
Man, I mean, I just remember, you know, and we've talked about it, like when you're in high school, those are the ones that you kind of, you know, just remember a lot. Watched this one with my basketball team coach's house. His wife was Carolina grad, but 2001, I think Duke was number two, Carolina was number four. We go in there, Zather Carlos Boozer just broke his foot. So we start Casey Sanders, and our Brandon Haywood's like licking his chops because he's like, yeah, I got this dude guarding me tonight. Coach K takes Nate James out and puts Duhon in the starting lineup. And we shot like 33, something like that. That game, we hit 14 of them though. And, you know, just kind of come away with a big win in the Dean Dome.
You got a recent one that you like too?
We'll see. I guess he's already mentioned the Trey, the Grayson Allen, I guess that was the Trayvon Duvall, not Duvall.
That was Derek Thornton.
Derek Thornton blocked
Gilberry. Yeah.
Grayson throws the ball up because I have the picture of Rasheed Wallace and Antoine Jamison.
Another game we had like, no business winning. Yeah. Bryce had like 30-20 or just something stupid that game, dude.
You remember, I think Matt Jones got injured in that game.
Yeah,
we did. We played five guys for the entire second half.
Yeah.
Yep. That's a good one. I like that one. All right, Raul, what you got? I like going to kind of the older one and one of the newer ones for the crowd here.
Well, I mean, Josh already mentioned the 2004 game. That was my immediate thought. I think it's just because I watched it live. I was still in college and I was living with a Duke fan and a UNC fan. So it was just this like fun, very kind of, you know, competitive environment that we had going watching the game. And so that was just an amazing shot. I mean, he just somehow just went uncontested down the entire length of the court.
Yeah.
So that was beautiful, obviously. What else? I mean, you know, the 2008 one, this is not that much more recent, but I might have to shout that out just because.
Is that the Greg Paulus game?
Yeah. I know they didn't have Lawson, but during that time period, we could just not beat them.
Yeah, well, so, Hansborough had something stupid that game, but Paul has played out of his mind.
Right. And we hit a lot of singles.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think we hit 13 threes in that game.
Yeah, I think Paulus had six of them, I believe. Yeah. I think he had 18 points and it was all three pointers.
Yeah.
So obviously, you know, Lawson was a guy we just could not guard, you know, especially with Paulus at the point of attack there. So you have to take that with a grain of salt, but just getting that win in that stretch when UNC was just beating us over and over and over again was big.
Yeah. I agree with that. I got a few. I'm trying to go. I guess my most recent one is still kind of old, but one of my favorite ones. This would have been 06. So I was in high school. So my junior year of high school. I won't talk about the second game that year, but the first game that year, JJ goes to the dome and drops a 35 piece. And it was just one of the best performances ever, right? He's 12 of 22 from the field. And the difficulty of shots, I think they had Rayshon Terry or Jackie Manuel, and he just sits him down, drills the three, like Dickie V's on the commentary, right? Like it's just a moment. And obviously at that point in your life, right, you take these things like a little bit more serious, right? You're living and dying by every shot, every move. That was just a super fun team. And Carolina was really good that year too, right? Like, they, I mean, maybe not really good, but they were good. I think they were top 25. Obviously, I think we were number one or two in the country at that point. That's up there. That's up there for me. My other one, I guess I'll go in order here. Maybe it's just because I love this team so much. The 2013 game at the Dome. It's not super memorable. You look at the final score, it's like 69-53. You're kind of like, ugh.
Well, we were up 13-1, I think.
Curry hits his first seven shots of the game. One, he's falling on his ass and just like throws it up. And I'm by that point, I'm like, ooh, yeah, we in this. Like, it's getting fun now. Mason goes off in that game.
Doing the
like,
reverse dunk.
Yeah, dude.
We played way off McAdoo, I believe. We were just ignoring him completely defensively.
That was a really fun game. Curry was just lit us up, and we didn't really play a bench though, really, either. Like, none of our guys on our bench did anything. But yeah, that was a fun one. And my last one here, and I think I don't hear this one getting talked about a lot. The one that I hear from this year is the one at Duke, but ironically, that's not my favorite because we were up big, Ja gets hurt, we kind of get blown out, and then we come back and win. The game at Carolina is one of my most fun games to watch, dude. The first half is kind of like very back and forth. And then the second half happens. We had that little bit of injury trouble, and there's a lineup with like Grayson Allen, Matt Jones, Emil Jefferson, because Tyus gets hurt. He hits his back on like the pylon for a little bit there. And then he comes back in and just completely dominates the game in every facet. He has 24 points. He makes all 12 free throws. We shoot 59% in the second half. Those types of games are the most fun for me, where it's like really close in the first half, and then we have this moment where we're like down five to Carolina in the second half, and we go on like a 15-2 run or whatever to just like blow it open. So shout outs to 2015. I guess that's still not super recent.
You know what another blowout that was really fun was? It is very recent. It was 2022. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, obviously Griffin. That's kind of tainted by what happened in the next two games, but – yeah, AJ Griffin going off. We were up like 20 in the first half, I think.
And then we go on like a 10-0 run to start this. We're up like 29 or something like early in the second half.
I wish we had the sound bite, but the God Almighty Hubert at their follow is like just drilling middies uncontested. just hear some dude. It's best.
Yeah, that was AJ, the big 27 piece on that one. Yeah, that one's hard to think of because then it brings back some other memories of that year, but. Against Carolina. But yeah, so some good ones there.
By the way, All-Star Apollo.
All-Star.
P5, yeah.
Congrats.
Yeah. Big time. Anything we missed on that one? Any other kind of standout games, performances, or moments? I mean, I feel like we've kind of hit the bigger ones in the last several years. Obviously, you mentioned 01. I think it was 02 or something up there where we also just kind of like blitzed them right out of the bag where Jay Will like really scores bad that year, though. Blitzed the passing line. Yeah, like we were really good that year.
The 2000 game, that was the Battier block on Forte.
I love that play. Amazing.
Yeah.
2005 is the one that we won at home on like the last second stop because Kay knew what the play was and JJ blew it up in the corner. I think we lost at Carolina that year, though.
Yeah, I think we've covered most of the wins, actually, because we lost at Carolina in 2011. We lost there in 18. We lost there in 17.
Yeah.
So that kind of about does it, really.
We lost there in 19, too.
I hardly count the 19 games.
Yeah, I didn't have Zion there. 14, we lose there. 13, we swept. Yeah, 12, we won. Yeah, so pretty much all it. I guess you could say 2010, but they were just so bad in 2010, man. It was
and I felt like that game we actually underperformed because you remember that game
we only
was
beat
about
like 10. Beat about like 10.
It was tight into the second half.
Yeah, another Mason reverse dunk though. That was when he broke it out. It's when he got started. All right, guys, before we get out of here, let me put you to the fire here a little bit. KenPom's got this as a 79-73. Carolina win. Josh, agree, disagree, who you taking?
Well, I disagree with that, actually. I will say the one thing that does make me nervous is even though Duke is 7-1 in January, won 11 out of the last 12 games, I still think going into halftime and then coming out of halftime, there's not been that killer instinct, right? Duke has either stumbled into the locker room or they've stumbled out of the locker room.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about that, number one. But we sat here tonight and we looked at matchups. I like Duke's matchups.
Yeah.
I like Duke's ability to score the basketball. I like the shooting ability. This is a game where maybe critics of Duke could say that Duke doesn't have that dog on this team yet. I think this is a game where, like, if there is a dog on this team, he presents himself, you know, Saturday night. And so I'll about flip that. I'll say Duke, you know, maybe with a 6-7 point win, about 80. So I'll go 80 to 72, 80 to 73.
Okay.
But somebody's going to emerge, I think, in this game, and it might be Proctor. Somebody's going to emerge as, like, kind of that closer and that grit that I think the team's going to need to move forward. So that's where I'm heading.
I love it. I love it. Ro, I'll go to you this time. You agree, disagree with the 79-73 Carolina favorite? Or not so much if they're favorite, but do you think that's going to play out that way?
Well, in reality, I think that the two teams are much closer than KenPom has them at. You know, Carolina has not dealt with any injuries this year, really. And, you know, Duke obviously has had a ton. I just feel like, you know, by the end of the year, that KenPom gap is going to have narrowed.
Yeah.
See, I mean, we broke down the matchups, like you said, and I really do think we match up pretty well with them. But, you know, for the sake of the podcast and the running bit, I have to be the guy who picks the loss. So I have to come up with a reason for it, too. So I'm just going to say the revenge factor. Yeah. To me, it's like they were the number one team coming into the season last year. They missed the tournament. They get swept by Duke. I just think all the returning guys are going to be super motivated.
Yeah. All two of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're two of their best players. So
that's true. Yeah. Well, and I think we haven't talked about that piece, but that is a big piece, right? This rivalry works that way. Like, look at the times that Duke goes back to back, Carolina wins 93. Duke or Carolina wins 09, sweeps Duke, gets Harrison Barnes, Duke wins in 10, right? Like, these things, Duke wins in 15, sweeps Carolina. They go in 16, they win it in 17. Like, these things tend. They beat us in the Final Four. They enter one seed or the preseason number one. Don't even make the tournament. Get swept by Duke. These things flip like that. Like, this rivalry humbles you in that way. Like, you don't even really get to enjoy the win long enough because it seems to flip right back around for the other side, which is what makes it great. But which is also maybe a little bit of a fear factor heading into this. So, Shu, what do you got? You gonna you rolling with Carolina here?
No, man. I told you after they beat us in the Final Four game that we're never going to lose.
Oh, yeah. You said Shire's never going to lose to him, right? Sure.
The deal we made. We're never losing to him. I'm going to take us. I like us being the underdog, to be honest with you. I like us coming in with a little bit of chip on our shoulder, you know, hunting them. So I'll go 84-78. Good guys.
Okay. That's interesting. Y'all are kind of playing it a little ahead of the thing. I'm going to go kind of the other way with it. I do like Duke in this game. I don't think it's going to be quite the scoring affair, though. And I'm just kind of basing that on Carolina's last few games. They put 75 up at Florida State. They put 74 up at Georgia Tech. I think our game plan is going to try to be to slow them down, to stop them, to muddy this up a little bit. I'll take Duke winning kind of a grinded out game. And I agree with Josh that either Roach or Proctor just kind of really comes through and closes the game the last 5 minutes. Just makes some big plays, some tough pull-up shots, some tough pull-up threes, gets to the line, whatever it takes there. And I'll say Duke wins. Let's go 73-68. So I'll say Duke by five there.
I didn't give a score, did I?
Yeah. What do you
got? I'm with you, though. I think it's going to be a little bit uglier. And I think that's actually, if it is, that'll help Duke. But I'll say it's going to be in the 60s. I'm going to say 69-67. Baycott full court shot for the win.
Oh, shit. Full court shot Baycott. All right. Yeah. Well, if he gets that, then I'll buy season three of The Outer Banks on DVD for him or something there. All right. Well, we got three of us rolling with Duke. I mean, you gotta have somebody.
Yeah, you gotta have Debbie Downer.
Yeah, someone's gotta do it.
It's not interesting,
no,
right?
I know.
No, yeah. And I think you could easily make the, like, as good, like I said earlier, as good as we feel about the matchups, I think they have just the same probably optimism on their end.
And they have been better than us this year so far.
Yeah.
And they play well at home. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll
see. One thing I was going to bring up is I know they played more quad one games than us, but we have played well against good opponents. We're 4-1 right now. They're 4-3. All our losses have been to kind of mediocre teams, honestly.
Yeah.
So maybe that favors us. Maybe it is kind of like what Russ Hainline was saying. Like, we tend to get a little bit more motivated for these bigger matchups. Yeah. Not that you need extra motivation for Carolina anyway, but
yeah. Yeah. But you know, I think it's going to be one of those. It's going to be one of those. All right, well, let's get out of here. Josh, we appreciate you joining us, man. We know you're going to be there kind of covering the game. So kind of plug what you got going on. Tell us what you're working on. Most of us are probably familiar with the football side, but you can plug that too. But I know you got some stuff on the basketball end this year. Yeah. Talk to us.
Yeah, for sure. So on the football side, Duke Football Talk at Duke FB Talk on X, Twitter, whatever you call it, and Instagram and whatnot. But yeah, on basketball, I've been doing covering Duke this year for Duke Report at Duke Report on Twitter. So shout out to Freddie Hodges for kind of making that happen for me. But done a handful of games, seen Raul at least one of them, seen shoot a couple. But yeah, just trying to, you know, we really do try to give like that experience, man. Like, what do fans want to see? Like, what do they want to hear? Got lucky this year and asked Jared McCain about his Christmas holiday.
I heard that. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it hit on Twitter, man. It's like over 20 million views on that thing. So,
wow.
So we try to mess around and, like, you know, obviously give good coverage, but then also, like, you know, what's maybe something that everybody's not doing. And we try to bring that. It's going to be interesting Saturday night. Never been to, definitely never covered a game at the Dean Dome. I've only attended one game at Dean Dome in my life. So it'll be interesting. I'll keep you guys in the loop there, but should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm curious about, we'll talk after though, of just the emotions and how you kind of like remain neutrality there, like on press row, right? If you're losing, it's very easy to remain neutral, right? Like, I think if you're winning a big play, it's a little bit harder. But yeah,
it's definitely difficult at Duke when me and Shue are sitting beside each other on press row. Cause we're like,
Sure. That's good stuff there. That's good stuff. All right,
yeah. Well, were you at the Clemson game?
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. You didn't sit with me.
I sat in the middle. Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been intense.
I sat over with the Clemson guys, which sucks.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. You were down there by them. Yeah. That was great. And yeah. So yeah. It's been a lot of fun, man. It's been interesting. I enjoy it. Kind of do miss, honestly, going to a game and just being able to cheer and watch it as a fan, but I'm not going to complain.
No, for sure. For sure. We'll get out of here. So, you know, folks, in the meantime, rate, review, subscribe. You can find us wherever you listen. For some of y'all, that's the usual places. For some of y'all, it's the unusual places. So you can find us on X/Twitter at Devil's Den Pod 247. You can email us at thedevilsdenpod@gmail.com. You can find us on the board at thedevilsden.com. It's going to be a big one. So buckle up. Keep those faces strong and the verve high. Go Duke.